Hi everyone, thank you so much for finding us on your favorite podcast app and or YouTube. My name is Joe Lee with Faith Wilson, Christie's International Real Estate.
And my name is Jeff Chan, also licensed with Faith Wilson, Christie's International Real Estate.
And starting from today, we're also known as the Mike for Vancouver Real Estate. Jeff, I mean, sorry, Batman.
Thank you. How are you doing, Joe?
Very well. Monday is podcast day,
and happy Halloween. Welcome to our Halloween special. Mm-hmm. Today, Joe and I have a super exciting topic. Just to follow the theme, we're going to be talking about how to identify whether or not your property is haunted, what you can do about it, and how to avoid buying the wrong property.
And there's actually a website that you can go, and there's a registry that you can actually insert people's address and saying that how it's haunted and what was your experience about it. Mm-hmm. Sorry guys, not April Fool's Day here.
No.
There's no such thing. At least I don't think there's such a thing. So bear with us here. Our all jokes aside, our topic here today during Halloween is really all about strata livings.
Mm-hmm.
I like to say as prices in Greater Vancouver continue to increase, single detached houses is becoming a
more and more unattainable dream for a lot of people.
Correct. And it's also going to be a step up process that they work themselves into a house.
Mm-hmm.
They don't just automatically, first thing they buy, like our parents, is buy a house.
Yeah.
Right. So what that means is that people it's super important for people to understand about stratified living, because mm-hmm. that is most likely where you're going to end up. Should you be buying or renting or just starting out before you hit the end goal of buying a single family house?
Absolutely. And you know, Joe and I both live in stratified homes, and we can tell you from firsthand experience that there is a lot more to living in a stratified property than what you might think. And although Joe and I both live in townhouses, they're governed very, very differently.
That's right. And I think when you use the word governor, it's probably the best word, because buying into a strata is almost like buying into its own government.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own set of rules. They have their own set of laws that you must obey, or else they're going to fine you
mm-hmm.
over and over and over again. And every building, it's different. Just like when you go to different countries,
mm-hmm.
you have to obey by their playing field.
And Joe's not exaggerating. You know, there's stratas that are the handout fines, like they're going out of style. And to continue on that analogy,
mm-hmm.
just like a democratic government, all of its people has a vote. Mm-hmm. Meaning if you live in a stratified property and you are the homeowner, you are entitled to a vote.
Mm-hmm.
And what you do with this vote can dictate the future of how the strata is going to be run.
Mm-hmm,
so definitely. make sure, please, you listen carefully to everything that we have to share with you today
mm-hmm.
so that you can protect yourself and protect your best interests and full enjoyment of your home.
Correct. So before you buy into a stratified home, the listing agent will most likely send you or send your agent something called the strata documents. And within the strata documents, it basically lays out everything that you need to know about the building.
Mm-hmm.
Not your unit. Like your unit is great, kind of nice, beautiful marble, nice total toilets, maybe even with a bidet. But this one is probably focusing more just towards the building itself.
Mm-hmm.
So without further ado, I have a very lame joke I wrote here. Let's get strata. It really mattered. You should get started.
You guys can't see. I'm like closing my eyes. And I'm trying to avoid the biggest eye roll ever. And I can't believe that Joe didn't address the most important question that we all want to know is, what is Joe's costume? Is he Little Red Riding Hood? Wow, this fabric's really soft. Or are you Superman? So if you guys are just listening through a podcast, please check out the YouTube video when it's up and drop a comment. I would love to hear from you what your opinions are. And we want to let the people decide on what Joe's costume is.
Yeah, because when I came, Jeff was like, are you Superman or what? And I'm like, hey, I can be whatever you want to be, man. Without further ado, let's get going. Let's get going. The first thing that we wanted to talk about in regards to all of these stuff is obviously the bylaw, which is literally, once again, the law for the complex. And I already mentioned this, every building has their own set of laws. So once again, we're going to repeat this over and over again in this podcast. We cannot make assumptions just because your other friends lives in stratified homes and they have their set of rules. Their set of rules might be completely different from your set of rules. And no, when I say rules, it's not the two most common thing that people want to know about. We go way deeper than that. What are those two?
Is it rentable?
Yeah.
And is it pettable? Sorry, pettable is not really a word. Is it pet friendly?
Right. That's generally the normal consumer, what they care about when it comes down to bylaws. But like we said, there it goes way deeper than that. I'll give you a perfect example. Let's talk about cannabis. Weed, right?
It's legalized.
It's legalized. So a lot of people, they just make the assumption, well, I get to grow it. I get to manufacture it. I might be even be able to smoke it. If I can't smoke it inside, I'll be able to smoke it on my balcony. Unfortunately, depending on your bylaw, that none of that could even be allowed.
Yeah.
And they might be able to penalize you really hard should you be interested into doing something like this.
Yeah. Some people can't even have barbecues on their balcony.
Yeah. I mean, and that's where, like, once again, like, depending on who's in charge and they can implement different kind of rules. The second one is parking, right? Visitor parking. How many visitor parking? How is visitor parking even
dealt How long with? Can they stay?
Yeah. How many days out of the week can I be there? And I, you can't just be like, oh, I have a visitor parking pass. I put in your car. You could just park there forever. No, it, guys, like, it doesn't work like that. They have rules to that.
And when you break the rules, what happens? Slap with a fine.
Slap with a fine, right? Yeah. And that is kind of just to kind of get things started, right? I know there's one thing that you really want to cover when it comes to bylaws.
Oh yeah, there's also one thing that you should know that you might not be aware of is there can be limits on how many occupants can be in your home.
Yes.
What I mean by that is oftentimes in a one bedroom condo, there might be a restriction that it can't have more than three people living in it. Two bedrooms might have a limit of five people and three bedrooms might have a limit of seven people. But we all have also seen different numbers. I know firsthand of someone who told me that they once lived in an apartment and shared it with 20 other people out in Surrey.
Wow, okay.
I don't even know how that's logistically possible. What if two people need to go to the bathroom at the same time? What if there's a fire? How do they evacuate this place? And this is kind of exactly, I think, why there's bylaws that, in place to govern these kinds of things. Because what if there is a fire and they can't evacuate everyone? It's like extra load and stress on the water, electrical,
piping system.
And piping systems, right? And sewage. Like, hey, there's 20 more people producing waste than the expected three.
Yeah.
All so, these things matter.
Yeah, and okay, first of all, 20 is crazy. I've never seen 20 before. The most I have seen in the UBC area was about 7 in a two-bedroom. And even then, I was kind of like, whoa, okay, what is going on in here? That's nuts. This is actually straight up nuts. But not only is the amount of numbers in your strata a potential rule or law, what you can do within your unit is also a rule in the law.
What do you mean by what you can do? Don't people just live in it? Like, what do you do in a house?
Well, no, that's the thing. A lot of people, they just assume that every single condo or townhouse unit is for residential.
Yeah.
But in fact, some people love to run their home office out of it or home business.
That's definitely a hot topic now, especially with COVID and everybody working from home.
Exactly. No, and I'm not talking about running your own YouTube channel. That's that's not what I'm trying to say. Or running, like, you know, your home, I don't know, like a video editor at home, or your game designer, you just say at home. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about some people, I'll give you two perfect examples that a lot of people like to do. Accounting firms, they like to run their accounting businesses directly from the residential homes, meaning that there's going to be random people walking in and out because they're your clients. The second one that I see most a lot is tutoring. They literally tutor out of their home, which is a condo, which is not allowed. And I see math, I see science, I even see piano. And that's going to link me into my next thing.
Hopefully not in the wood frame buildings that they're running that.
It was actually a wood frame building. Which, since we're talking about piano, another rule that I think everybody needs to know and at least acknowledge is the quiet hours. Unfortunately, guys, living in a stratified home, you are going to have your neighbors and you need to not create additional disturbance to people around you. Hence, they have this concept of quiet hours, which in my understanding, it generally starts, well, I don't know, I've seen like 10 p.m. to 5:30 a.m. I've seen 11 to 6. Mm-hmm. I've seen 11 to 7.
These are different than the city bylaws too.
They are different from the city bylaws. Mm-hmm. So guys, what this really means is that no, you cannot be running your washer and dryer maybe right before you sleep.
Sorry, yeah, Joe's just laughing because I literally was telling him I was running my dryer at 1 a.m. last night. And, you know, I've never had a complaint about any noises, not that I'm throwing a lot of crazy parties or anything, but my neighbor and I, we communicate very well. We get along great. And I only have one neighbor beside me. And, yeah, I've never had an issue.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, I tell this to my client. My client's like, yeah, Joe, no, I'm not going to be playing my piano at, like, midnight. Oh, like, great, that's a good start. Don't play your piano midnight. But there's actually a lot of different activities that will create additional noise to your neighbors, mm-hmm. right? So that is kind of the quiet hours.
And that's only quiet hours within your unit.
There's actually quiet hours for the amenities. Mm-hmm. And this is where I want to just use one of my examples. This is before I became a resale agent. I was a pre-sale agent. I had a friend that bought into a resale home. And the agent at that time, obviously because I was in pre-sale, they used me. Like, I guess they didn't review the documents at all. He bought into a building where the gym is not part of the actual high-rise concept of things. It's actually in kind of like the central courtyard area. And half of it is kind of like my friend's fault. My friend was kind of like, well, it's not part of, you know, there's no residential on top or beside it or below it. Then it should be more a little bit more relaxed in terms of operation hours. Mm-hmm. Right? And on top of that, he's the 4 a.m. club, 5 a.m. club guys, wake up super early, hit the gym before the day starts.
These guys are usually super successful.
Correct.
Also a club that Joe's a part of.
But I'm not, I don't have the body to go for it. As you can tell, this all became an issue when he found out, obviously, after he moved in, that the gym doesn't open till 6. Mm-hmm. And he was really hoping that he will finish his gym by 6 and hit into his meditation hour by 6 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So what happens? He then got a commercial gym pass and still went out to a commercial gym at 4 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. Perfect example of not understanding or not taking the effort to read about the bylaws or the rules of your amenity space.
I mean, can you blame them? Like, if you guys haven't looked at any strata documents before, this is actually like a sometimes 300-400 page document that has so many different sections. And literally every time we hear clients talk about the strata documents, like, Joe, Jeff, there's so much. Mm-hmm. But actually, the clients that we work with, we summarize the entire strata document into a 1 or 2 page document. I mean, Joe, how long does it take?
Now for me to read the strata document, about 2 hours, 1.5 to 2 hours. I know the first time I read it was like 8 hours.
Right. So most people don't have 8 hours to spend reading the documents. Yeah. But again, it doesn't matter. The strata doesn't care how in-depth it is. It's your responsibility as a homeowner to know. Yeah. But that's something that Joe and I will do for you. And we'd be happy to provide you with that service.
Exactly, when you work with us. Mm-hmm. Right?
Now, other than the quiet hours, there's also something else that we talk a lot about in terms of moving day. Now, moving day is oftentimes very, very exciting, or it can be the biggest headache when you're buying a home. Mm-hmm. And there are move-in and move-out fees.
Yeah.
And Joe talks about this before, about the soft costs mm-hmm. of purchasing real estate. And we've seen these fees range from anywhere from $50 all the way up to $300.
Yeah.
And it can be a two-time charge or one-time charge. What I mean by that is you can pay once for the move-in and move-out, mm-hmm. or you might have to pay separately. Not only that, you also have to notify the strata of when and what time and what date that you are actually moving in. You can't just say, oh, I noticed there's 3 elevators. Oh, it's all good if I just take one. Mm-hmm. No. You know what happens if you try to move in and then you don't notify the strata? Fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Common trend here. You break a rule, fine. So if you don't want to keep paying fines, make sure you guys know the rules.
And not only just that, I'll add on to what you just said, is that some stratas even tell you that this is the hour that you can move after you book your elevator. For example, like you book your elevator starting at 2, they expect you to finish by 4. Mm-hmm. Or you have your elevator by noon, they expect you to finish by 4. Mm-hmm. Now, the durations, the time, it's different. I have even gone through stratas where they only allow 2 move-in periods. Mm-hmm. One is at 9:30 in the morning. The other one is at 1 p.m. in the afternoon and nothing else. You can't go 3, 4, 11:30 in the morning. No, they're like, it's either 9:30 or 1 o'clock. That's all you have.
Great.
Right? So once again, these are some of the things that you definitely want to understand a little bit more before you get yourself kind of, you know, all the way to the finish line. Be like, what do you mean I can't move in at 2:30? My truck is coming at 2:30. Mm-hmm. Right. So the last one that I wanted to really talk about in terms of bylaws is, I think, is a crucial one, is this is on the table, is renovations. Mm. Now, this is what I'm going to say is the rules to apply for renovations really, really, really varies depending on whether or not you're in a townhouse complex or you're in a condo complex. Mm-hmm. Generally, when it comes down to renovations, with our experience, is that townhouses are generally a little bit more lenient. I have gone into a townhouse complex where they don't care. They like, okay, just tell me what you're doing. Oh, you're changing the flooring? Great. What else are you doing? Are you tearing any walls? Are you changing any piping? No? Great. I don't need to know anything else. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about it. Oh, by the way, renovation hours between this to this. I have also been into condos where if you want to do renovations, they have a specific form. They want to know everything that you're doing, what kind of underlay you're putting below your hardwood, what kind of hardwood are you putting, is it vinyl, is it laminate, is it engineered, what kind of color is it, where are you sourcing this, who are you using, who are they licensed, all of that stuff, and you must submit it before a certain time and a certain date if you want that to be reviewed in the next strata meeting.
That sounds like a very well-run strata.
Yeah, if you're okay playing with that, within the rules.
Yeah.
If you're not playing within the rules, or you just kind of do what you want to do, then you'll be like, whoa, this is really problematic.
Yeah, definitely a matter of perspective. And I agree with you. I think like living in a townhouse, I remember when I wanted to install an EV charger mm-hmm. in my garage. Super simple process.
Yeah.
It was literally had to notify them when I wanted to do it, what type of charger it was, who my electrician was, were they licensed, and were they insured. And mm-hmm. it was all done within a week. They didn't even have a special meeting about mm-hmm. it or anything like that.
Yeah. And now here's another townhouse thing that I see a lot of very, very often without even the strata's approval. Well, a lot of these new townhouses has those tandem parkings, the front and the back. Mm-hmm. And what a lot of people do is that when they first initially bought it, there's 2 parking. But then maybe they only have 1 car. So what they do is they actually build a drywall and like flooring for the front spot, and it literally turned that into like a gym, storage, a wine room, what have you, without any approval whatsoever. Yeah. I've seen that before.
That's like kind of extreme.
And I have seen on the flip side where strata would literally say, no, you cannot put hardwood in the bedroom. You can only put carpet. I don't care what kind of underlay you put in there. You can see that the extreme of life mm-hmm. differences in regards to, well, it's so strata living, why is it so different? Mm-hmm. So guys, when it comes to renovation, or should renovation be on the table, read, and never assume. Don't be like, well, Jeff's complex says I could just do this, and you know, I'll just tell the strata what I'm doing without giving any details.
Oh, well, here's when I'm going to say my favorite line from my mom. Well, Jeff, your friends are going to go jump off a bridge. Are you going to go jump off a bridge too?
Oh man, my mom says that all the time when I was growing up. Oh my God, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No. The next, we're going to move on to an equally important document, and that's the Form B. Now, the Form B, Joe likes to refer to as the Bible, kind mm-hmm. of, mm-hmm. About the unit. And literally, the Form B will tell you exactly what dollar amount you're supposed to be paying for your strata fee.
Yeah.
The most up to date. Now, I know what you might be thinking. Oh, well, when I go to see a listing, the realtor has this feature sheet that also says the strata fee. When I go onto rew.ca, I also see that there's a strata fee listed mm-hmm. there. Yes, those are generally accurate as well. However, when a realtor takes on a listing, sometimes they'll order the strata documents, and at that time, the strata fee might be X dollar amount. Mm-hmm. But from the time that they got the documents to when the time the property is sold and they have an accepted offer, that can change in the form of, like, you know, maybe there was a special levy and they needed to increase the strata fees, or for whatever reason.
Yeah. whatever.
That is why you should always confirm in your Form B what the correct dollar amount is for the strata fee that you're going to be paying.
Right. And not just that. Sometimes, and like I said, it's not the agent's fault. Maybe it's something, couple of things change. But another one that I see is very, very important for you to at least take a look at the Form B is your parking and your locker location. And whether or not they even have one. Mm. Oh, because I think we've both gone through this experience. It's like on the feature sheet, it says one locker. You're like, oh, great. Make some assumptions. There's a locker. But by the time you get the Form B, the locker says NA. And then the agent was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I thought the bike locker was da 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 da.
Right? I'll go even one step further. So I've seen a listing where it says that there was one parking. And they're like, yeah, you can rent a parking from another tenant. Imagine the disappointment that we had.
It's, once again, and that's the reason why Form B is very, very important. Now, another one that, aside from what you said, is also very important is if there's any lawsuit against or from the strata. And once again, this could range. You know, when people see this on Form B, they're like, oh my God, a lawsuit, mm-hmm. right? I'll give you two perfect examples of two that we literally just went through mm-hmm. Of the degree of severity of this particular lawsuit. I recently dealt one with my client. I've been working with this client for about a year now. Finally, he was relatively picky. We were able to find him something that he really likes. High ceilings, great, right in the middle of the Olympic Village, looking into the courtyard, very, very quiet. However, once we got the accepted offer, the strata document came, the front page was that there is a litigation against, actually from the strata, towards the developer and the insurance company.
Sounds serious.
Sounds very, very serious. We were reading through the thing. They were saying that there was parking membrane issues from the five-year warranty checkup. Mm-hmm. There was balcony membrane issues. The most important thing, there was also heating issues where, like, I think the cooling and the heating was reversed. Mm-hmm. So some homes was having some problems, and there's also window issues. And then it doesn't say anything within the strata document that those things are rectified. I had to literally start calling the strata manager, begging them for an answer, and the email that they got was, these things are rectified. And the homeowners were paid out. Obviously, as a buyer, they're like, okay, you didn't tell me who fixed it, when was it fixed, am I just supposed to take your word for it? I mean, don't get me wrong, you're the strata manager, but I need to know for my peace of mind that when did you fix it, how did you fix it, and what did you mean that you paid out everybody? Like, was it just nobody fixed anything, and then here's $1,000, everybody gets $1,000, shut your mouth. Is it that, or is it you guys already pay for all the repairs? They came, they checked, they realized they made a mistake. Oh, you guys already fixed it? Here's $1,000 each for compensating that you guys already had the special levies or what have you already fixing it.
Two very, very different.
Yeah, very, very, very different, yeah. Right? That, as you can tell, my buyer did ultimately end up walking because the strata refused or didn't want to provide the specific time, date, and like, or who fixed it. Mm-hmm. It literally just says, these things that you asked has been fixed. Why are you asking? Mm-hmm. Right? So that's one example. And I think before we started the podcast, you had another example of something very small, but it sounds very scary.
Oh, yeah. Where one of the strata lot owners slipped. So they were suing the strata because the paths weren't salted properly. And it was like either raining or snowing during the winter.
Yeah.
I mean, like something like that sounds so... Not that it wasn't important to that individual. Everybody was upset that they got hurt. But it just didn't seem like that big of a deal in the grand scheme of things, and it wouldn't affect all 200 owners.
Yeah, like, well, compare my example with your example. If you read it on the strata Form B saying there is currently a lawsuit in place, you're like, whoa! But then after reading mine and reading yours, as a home, as a potential buyer, it's going to be two very different experiences.
Yeah, I wouldn't even bat an eyelash at that.
Yeah, and for me, in my example, I would. Like, even if I am the buyer, I would be like, ooh, okay, well, I do want to know a little bit more, mm-hmm. right? So once again, don't just because it checks yes or no and you freak out because of whatever the answer, I would say just dig a little bit deeper, but definitely look at it, whether or not does actually check yes or does it actually check no.
Mm-hmm. But another thing on the Form B it also says is whether or not the owner owes any money to the strata.
Yes.
And we know sometimes, hey, this can be several thousands to tens of thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when clients see this number, they're like, oh shit, like, no, Jeff, Joe, we can't buy into this property. Like, I don't have an extra 35 grand to throw in. Mm-hmm. Like, no, we got to look at somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's where we say, hold on to your horses. Yep. That is not the case.
That's right. That's right. It's kind of the reverse of kind of the lawsuit thing that we're talking about. Whereas something like this, it's, I guess I'll take, first of all, before I even say anything, the reason why we say hold your horses is because in the standard contract of purchase and sale, it already says is that the seller will make sure that there's no financial charges or any financial penalties for whatever, for the unit before they transfer to the new owner.
Exactly. So one of two things will happen. Either the seller will make sure that that levy is paid, or come on your statement of adjustments on completion day, your notary or your lawyer will hold back that amount from giving it to the seller's notary or lawyer, and you won't be paying for that anyways. Exactly. And they'll pay directly to the strata.
Exactly. So similar to kind of, is there any lawsuit for or against the strata? When you see that there is money, the seller actually owes some money to the strata, like, don't freak out. Just, I say, read it, acknowledge that it's there. But then, like, you know, if you want to dig a little bit deeper, dig a little bit deeper. But don't freak out just because the current seller hasn't paid strata fee for like 6 months or something like that. All right, that will bring us to, I would say, generally when it comes down to strata documents, this is probably the scariest part, which is the minutes and AGM. This is the reason why some strata documents has 30 something attachments. Most of it is going to be in the minutes. Now, minutes from the strata, I'll say it will either happen monthly, bi-monthly, or quarterly. It depends on the strata. Our understanding is townhouse complexes are generally leaning more towards quarterly meetings, especially the smaller the complex. And condos and apartments generally like to lean towards monthly and bi-monthly meetings just because there's more things they have to discuss. However, don't be afraid of those attachments because minutes are actually super easy to read and generally there isn't too much on it. But however, on the flip side, if you read all through all the minutes and throughout the months they keep talking about a certain thing, then maybe that's something that you want to dive just a little bit further into it. Right? The more important thing that out of all of this is really the AGM. You want to quickly cover the AGM?
Yeah, so the AGM, like we is the annual general meeting, and this is extremely important is because they will talk about the big topics, like if there's any upcoming repairs that are coming up, are we going to pay for it or are we going to defer it? Any bylaws that have been brought up that you want to change? Hey, maybe what about that unit that we were helping with a client where time and time again we were seeing this vote come about this pet restriction. So this building had no pets allowed, but it's, I think, two times in the last 2 years, several owners have brought it to a vote, but it got defeated and it got defeated. So that is why we have told our buyers, you must be aware of what the bylaws are, use your votes, and if it's something that you're really passionate about, make sure you show up to these meetings and you speak your mind.
Right. And in regards to AGMs, you can actually read through the AGMs to know a little bit about the kind of people that owns the units within the building.
Oh, 100%. And what Joe means is that if you notice that, hey, the similar issues regarding repairs and renovations seem to get defeated again and again and again, but these seem like important repairs that should be done, that's a pretty good indicator that most of the owners in the building are actually investor-driven. What that means is that, hey, they want to ensure the greatest ROI in their pocket. That's why they don't really care about fixing the building because they're not actually living in it. And they're going to be selling off that building within 5 to 7 years before all the big repairs and issues will come in.
That's right. And on the flip side, I would say is that if you read through an AGM and they're already talking about trying to get money for the upcoming repair or the maintenance for something that's 3 years down the road, then this I would like to categorize as some a strata being very proactive. I'm doing finger quotes right now, right? So when I personally, when I read something like this from a strata document, it gives me a strong confidence that actually the people who live in this building, they actually really care. That's why they're trying to think about how they're going to get the money well beforehand and not waiting till the last second.
And we're not saying that an investor-driven building is a bad building to live in or to buy in. It just, we want you to be educated and be aware of what type of situation you're potentially getting into. And another good indicator is to see the percentage of people who show up to these meetings. Because put yourself in a tenant's shoes. If you're renting a place, You don't care about what's going on in the meetings. All you care about is how much rent you're paying, what your landlord is giving you, and probably watching the latest show on Netflix at home.
Right, right. Sadly to say is we both been into buildings where it was so tenant focused or investor driven that they cannot even muster enough people to attend the AGM. Mm-hmm. And that should give you guys like, oh, okay, like there's 200 homes and they can't even muster enough people to do an AGM. Once again, not saying it's bad, just say that this tells you something about the building.
Especially when since COVID, a lot of these AGMs are held virtually. Everyone has access to a smartphone. Like, how hard is it to hop on your Zoom for, let's say, half an hour and deal with important things to do with your home?
Talking about important, there is actually a third minute that if you do see it as part of your strata document package, this is the one I would say, read it, and fully understand it. Mm-hmm. What I'm talking about is SGM.
Super general meeting.
No, I'm Red Robin Hood. Oh. No. Special general meeting. Once again, this is generally like some sort of emergency meeting.
In case the title didn't explain it.
Exactly, right? Maybe because there's something break or something happened and they need immediate response. Like, it cannot wait until the AGM. It needs a response now. And some of the things that the most common one I have dealt with in the recent years is in 2019 with the insurance premium. Mm-hmm. When, long story short, not going to get too much about it, when all the deductibles for every single high-rise buildings or any building decided to go up and the insurance companies wants to charge these stratas sometimes even up to 300% more than the year before. Then what happens is a lot of strata councils got together because this happened really, really quickly and they wanted to figure out how would they be able to muster this extra money. Some of them done through special levies. Some of them took money directly from the contingencies. I also seen some people, some stratas literally have to sell their asset. I think it was one of the guest suites that they have to generate enough money so no special levies will be required. Mm-hmm. So guys, long story short, the insurance premium is just one example. I see other ones like a roof or pipe burst or what have you. Once again, well, if you see this, just read it. You just have to read it. That's the only thing I will say, mm-hmm. right? So those are the stuff from the minutes and the AGMs. And of course, now that you know, the SGMs. Another very, very, very important thing to read, should you find this in your strata documents, would be the depreciation report.
The depreciation report is probably the report that Joe and I look at the most closely when we're helping our clients purchase a home. And that's because in the depreciation report, that helps us understand what the current status and condition is of the building. Now, depreciation reports aren't a necessity, but if you're living in a building that's older than 5 to 7 years, we would hope that there would be a depreciation report so it can help us project the lifespan of how long your building, like your windows are going to last, your heating and cooling system, mm-hmm. all your pipes, your parking lot membrane, balcony membranes, all of those things. Mm-hmm. And that will help all the owners prepare and save or financially plan on how to deal with these things.
I like the way that you put it, financially plan, mm-hmm. right? Because for example, like if you want to change the membrane of the whole building, it is not 5 digits. Like we're talking about well into the 7 digits, mm-hmm. right? So without any proper planning, then you don't want any strata to be caught by surprise, because if this is all of a sudden going to be a huge special levy that gets passed down to the homeowners, mm-hmm. a lot of people won't be able to pay it mm-hmm. at all, right? And then obviously then what are you going to do? Force them to sell it, get the money. Like it's a huge mess if you don't do this right, right? So after the depreciation was done, I guess one of the things that I must say is that once it's done, yes, it's important, but please don't treat it like a Bible. Like, mm-hmm. oh, right here it says 2035, there is a $1.4 million repair or maintenance that's coming up. Well, that is just a projection. It depends mm-hmm. on the maintenance of the strata themselves. Sometimes if it was, they never maintain it properly, that timeline might get shifted a little bit earlier. Sometimes if the strata does maintain it very nicely, then they might be able to push that a little bit further out. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's important. It's a guidance, but it's not a true Bible that is accurate to the T.
Mm-hmm. And now the strata will also provide three methods on how to prepare for these, let's say, financial just things that you'll have to deal with.
Yeah.
Number one is the do nothing model.
Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect model. Don't do anything until something happens, and then you deal with it. Boom. Slap you with a one-time special levy.
Yeah.
Fix it. Move on.
Yeah.
Number two, you match a strata in preparation for a repair model.
Yeah.
Meaning your strata fee will increase every single year, or it could be quarterly, or a semi-annually.
That depending on the strata, and in order to kind of be able for the strata to have enough contingencies that so when the maintenance and the repair does come, you don't have to pay more special levies on it because you already pay it in your strata fees already.
And that answers a question that a lot of our clients have. It's like, well, Joe, Jeff, here's two apartments in downtown. Why does one have such a high strata fee, but it's the same size? And why does one have such a low strata fee? One could be like 50 cents a square foot and the other one's like 80 cents a square foot. Well, this is why. It probably means that that strata uses model number two and that they've increased their strata fee on an annual basis in preparation for any future repairs.
Yeah, and the most common one a lot of strata do decide to use is the hybrid model. So it's not the first one, it's not the second one, it's a mix of the first and the second one. They'll raise the strata fee, but not raise it to all the way to a point where you will have enough in the contingencies so you don't have to worry about any of this in the future.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not doing anything and you're gonna hit like a very strong special levy later on, right? So the hybrid model is the one that I most commonly see, right? So on top of this, this is where I'm going to say is that if the depreciation report was done, let's say 4 or 5 years ago, then it will be a little bit more difficult to kind of gauge where the strata, which model the strata is leaning more towards.
Mm-hmm.
If your depreciation report, if you're the lucky one, that has been completed, let's say within the last 24 months, it's great because then what you could do is you can look at the suggestions of the depreciation report and then you can actually try to match that with what the strata has tried to do with the strata fees within the last two AGMs as they try to vote for it to go up or they just even bring it up. Because then you can, by their decision here, you can automatically assume which kind of model the strata has decided to go with. Okay. Once again, if the depreciation report is done longer, then unfortunately, because our annual general meeting report doesn't go all the way back there, then that's where maybe a phone call towards the listing agent to ask the strata manager will be very helpful.
Yeah, and I would like to remind our listeners again that every building is different and every management company is also different. So this is just a generalization. And again, depreciation reports can be deferred. They don't have to be done.
And once again, if it doesn't get done, it should raise some questions on top of your mind, like, okay, why hasn't it been done?
Well, obviously, because the building is so well managed that every owner knows exactly what repairs are coming and they won't have any issues. Fingers crossed.
10% of it is that scenario.
Yeah.
90% of it is just, I don't want to spend the money, man.
Optimistic Jeff and realist Jeff.
No, since we're talking about this, this is also the time I guess I'll let people know is that yes, I have dealt with situations where a potential buyer would not even look at the listing if it's from
XYZ company.
Yeah, XYZ, thank you. Thank you, XYZ company.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have such a bad experience from before. But I always tell them, I say, hey, look, I understand you had a really bad experience. I get it. I totally get it. But sometimes it's not really about the company. It's really about the manager that's in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this is the same as almost with some other industries I like to talk about. It's not about the developer. It's the general contractors that's literally like aiming for everything. The developer is the one that's just paying all the money, right? So, but on the flip side, being a devil's advocate, yeah, I just said that it's about the managers. But the devil's advocate is sometimes these managers are overworked. They're overwhelmed. Yes, I do get really pissed off sometimes when I'm trying to get information from the strata manager and I cannot get a timely response. But on the flip side, once I started learning that some of these strata managers are not taking care of one building, some of them are taking care of six buildings at once, then I can understand why they're super stressed and they're super overwhelmed as well.
Well, of course. That's potentially over 1,000 units that somebody could be managing.
Can you imagine that guy's Monday? The amount of voicemails that he gets?
And not to mention probably a couple hundred emails.
Yeah.
So that it kind of explains why I've had 5 or 6 different property managers in the last 5 years.
And that probably explains why sometimes it takes 2 weeks to hear back from them. Because I like to assume that they're super busy.
And not because they don't like Joe, because he's annoying.
Whoa! Or like you. You experience it too. But anyways, yeah, so I like I would say is that that's pretty much some of the biggest things from
the strata documents.
Yeah. Should you want to obviously keep yourself safe and buying into a specific building.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Of course, like we recommend you read the entire thing because ultimately you as the potential buyer is going to be the person it directly affects. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have time, then those are the sections that we think are the most important.
Yeah, and there are some super small examples that we didn't bring out recently that's been implemented by quite a bit of strata.
Oh, yeah. Very relatable is, can your Amazon, Uber Eats, Skip the Dishes driver even enter the building?
Yeah, because some buildings, because of COVID, they completely cut it.
So if you're expecting a very important package from Amazon, mm-hmm. well, you better make sure you know your rules and bylaws mm-hmm. and plan for it accordingly, or else you might have some lost packages.
Mm-hmm. And as just before we say goodbye to the podcast, I just want to remind all our listeners is that the way that your strata is ran will impact how much rent, what is the sales price, and how fast you can rent or sell this particular unit. Mm-hmm. It will make an impact. So it is in your best interest to put yourself in a better building.
With that being said, as you guys should know already, my name is Jeff.
My name is Joe.
We're the Mike for Vancouver Real Estate. And please, please, please
help us with the algorithm. Like, subscribe, and comment, and turn on the notification bell if you're on YouTube.
Happy Halloween. We'll see you next time with
Market Update for the month of October. See ya.
See ya.